I think the one performance I want to talk about in this film, and I just, if we could be taking over, it's just like Peter Stormare's performance as Lucifer is just like out of this world.
I just like typed in Tilda Swinton and I was like, oh, I've not seen this one. And I had been led to believe that this film was not good, and it is good. I really enjoyed it.
I think he fits a particular type of role fantastically well, and there is no, you know, he's done Matrix to this, to John Wick, kind of the same character, just in a different...
I was going
to
say suit with a gun.
Yeah, exactly, suit with a gun, and he looks very good. Yeah. So yeah, I'm very happy.
Hello everyone, joining Flixwatch today we have Sophie.
Hi.
Miz.
Hello.
And Kobe.
Heya.
And we're here today to talk about Constantine. Thank you as always to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Miz and Sophie. Over to you, please, Miz, to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Hello, my name's Misael. I am Senior Marketing Manager at Audi. I actually work with Sophie, who's on the show today too, which is great. And I also used to host a podcast called Promote the Hell Out of It.
Why did you stop?
I was actually freelance for years and when I had the podcast. And then when I went to work full-time, just life, hosting, like actually doing the podcast was absolutely fine, but the time to book guests in and promote it and create marketing assets was really the last thing I wanted to be doing, when that's what I spend all my day doing at work.
That's fair enough, I guess. If you want to go back into the podcast game, I'm sure you're in the right place to start.
That's it. It might be coming. It might be.
Sophie, who are you?
I'm Sophie. I also work for Audi. I am the acquisitions manager there, which means I bring on shows that already exist onto our lovely network. I work with Miss, and yeah, my job is to just listen to podcasts day in, day out, talk to people, talk to creators, podcasters, and bring them into the wonderful world of Audi. Check it out at audi.co.
I like that line in your job description. Listen to podcasts. That's the main thing you need to do.
Yeah, it's quite hard to do because
there's a lot of them.
Obviously, there's a lot of them. B, they're a lot longer than any songs, and also you could listen to songs and work and type and write emails. Right, you can listen to music, sorry, but you can't really listen to a podcast and email, because you have to have that level of kind of engaged listening. So yeah, it's I say I listen to podcasts all day. I listen to one in the morning, one in the evening, and then I go to sleep. That's usually what I do. So yeah.
A breakfast podcast and a bedtime podcast, and then a lunch.
Exactly.
Where are you on the length of podcasts? I know Helen's quite happy. You're a bit more 30 minutes an hour, aren't you, Helen? Whereas I can go, as long as the podcast is interesting, I'll happily listen to it for as long as it needs to be. Apart from Joe Rogan, where like 4 hours seems a bit long.
Yeah, that's a bit excessive. Yeah, I'm with Helen. I sit in that kind of 45-minute gold zone. I'll just binge it. If I love it, it's an incredible documentary. It doesn't matter, really. Just make it 45 minutes so I can at least go and have a pee or something and then come back or whatever. So yeah, I've always been of that kind of 45-minute to an hour max golden zone, as I call it.
Fair enough. No, that's fine. I was going to talk about Seinfeld for some reason. I don't know why. Yeah.
I could talk about Seinfeld all day. I love Seinfeld.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Kramer. Do you want to talk about Kramer? I've changed
no,
my
because
I'm joking.
There's an episode where like George becomes like an editor for a book publishing house.
Yes.
And he's like really chuffed with his
yeah.
job. And he's like, all I have to do is read books all day. I can't believe this is my job. And that's what, when you said about, I listen to podcasts, that's that you made me think you're like a George Costanza. A London-based George Costanza.
my dream, one day.
Well, you brought us Constantine.
I did indeed.
So can you tell us first of all why you chose it, and then we'll give you the dreaded 60 seconds to give us the synopsis.
I chose this film quite simply because I love it. And it is like a kind of 2005 part kind of sci-fi graphic novel, whatever remake of something of the novel, interpretation of the novel. And I love Keanu Reeves. I love the themes that it's around. I love those kind of themes in films anyway, kind of theology, angels, demons, kind of things like that. So, yeah, I just wanted to bring it to the plate and have a chat about how amazing I think it is, really.
Fair enough. And your timer starts now.
Okay, so Constantine is about a supernatural exorcist, kind of demonology guy called John Constantine. He's obviously also a psychic as well because he has the ability to see the other side of the world, so to speak. So even though us as humans just see humans, he gets to see angels and devils and everything else that's going on. And the film is about him and a detective called Angela who teams up with him to investigate her twin sister's death because everyone thinks it was a suicide, but she doesn't. So he teams up with her to figure out what's going on. And in the process of that, discovers a lot of other very weird, dark, eerie things happening that basically could bring about the kind of end of the world as you know it. So there we go.
So where does this, I mean, this has got clear parallels, I guess, to The Matrix in, I guess, in styling, I guess, and also the fact is it's Keanu Reeves. Is that fair or where, and also where do you sit with Keanu as an actor?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I was watching it again last night to get over seeing Sacred Deer. and it was funny because I think he's a great character and I couldn't imagine anyone else that could play him in it. And I think it does have parallels to The Matrix. And the interesting thing is that he was in the middle of finishing the last Matrix film when he signed on to do this film. So it was the next film he did after that. But the director, Francis Lawrence, first choice was actually Nicolas Cage. And I feel like it would have been a very different film if Nicolas Cage had been John Constantine. I know a lot of the purists feel that Keanu was the wrong pick anyway, because in the novels, he is a blonde, skinny Liverpudlian man, so he's not American, he's not dark, he doesn't have dark hair or anything, so yeah. But I think that there's definitely some parallels there, but not, there's a lot more dark humor to it than there ever was when he was playing Neo. Didn't have a sense of humor, couldn't if that was allowed, but yeah. So I think there are parallels there, definitely. If you were coming off the back of watching The Matrix and you went to watch this, you would see elements of that, definitely.
And where are you with Keanu Reeves in general?
Yeah, I love him. I think he's great. Like, I've always been a Keanu Reeves fan. Like, I don't think... Oh, God, I don't want to tempt fate here. It's Timothy saying, I don't know if he'll win an Academy Award in his time. Maybe he has, and I haven't checked. But I think he fits a particular type of role fantastically well. And there is no... You know, he's done Matrix to this, to John Wick, kind of the same character, just in a different...
I was going
to
say suit with a gun.
Yeah, exactly. Suit with a gun. And he looks very good. Yeah. So yeah, I'm very happy. And then, you know, to, I don't know if anybody's ever seen Ransby Go for a Tangent, the film, Netflix film, definitely. What is it?
Always Be My Maybe.
Yeah. And he plays himself in that as the boyfriend of Ali Wong, who's the comedian, who's the actress in it. And he just does a brilliant comedy performance of being like an overly kind of coked up, ridiculous Hollywood movie star version of Keanu Reeves. And I just thought, I just love him even more now because he just took the piss out of himself. I just think he's brilliant. And I think he lends himself to a particular type of role. But when he does do it, he just is brilliant.
And there's always good vibes you hear about Keanu Reeves, isn't there?
Like, yeah, definitely. I think
taking a subway and also being happy to stand up and give his seat in the subway to someone else, which you wouldn't Nicolas Cage doing.
Unless you're Matthew Perry, who just seems to hate Keanu Reeves, which is just the most insane.
Really?
Yeah. In his book,
he
kind of like made a completely stupid comment, like, how come like River Phoenix is dead and Keanu's still here? It's like, that's just not a normal thing to say. And just like not a normal thing to say about Keanu. And it did not go well for Matthew Perry that day. I don't think his publicist had a good time when that was like picked out in his book. Because
when did that book come out?
Like last week? This was
oh, really?
Week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I literally have no idea.
You should Google like recently Matthew Perry and Keanu, because he just sounds like a dick.
Yeah, he just sounds like I mean, obviously go off tangents like music, movie, but like he just sounds like a great guy. Like he's apparently he gives like millions every year to the local children's hospital. He donates lots of his fortune. I was watching an interview with him and is it the film website Collider, I think it's called. And the guy saying, you know, my one redeeming memory of the journalist for there for of Keanu Reeves was I went onto a set where it was his day off. So I was like, I'm not going to get to chat to him. I'll just chat to everyone else who's acting. But he came in on his motorcycle anyway, on his day off, and sat with the journalist and took him to lunch. And like, you know, just, he didn't need to do that. He's an A-list movie star. It doesn't matter what journalists he chats to, but he came in. I was just like, oh, it's just so Keanu. Oh, so lovely. That's
what I'm like. Well, we've had James King, a journalist who's written at least one book. Was it potentially two books about Keanu Reeves? so taking his bio. Miz, where are you in Constantine and Keanu in general?
I like any fantasy film I can enjoy. I'm someone that likes things keeping quite faithful to the originals, especially when the main character is a punk rocker who's from Liverpool and it's based in London. That all makes for like my dream film. But saying that, I've rewatched Constantine a bunch of times. I find it's a very easy watch. Keanu in general, I mean, Bill and Ted is one of my most rewatched films. I think it's a very easy watch. I've never viewed him as an actor I thought, for example, was going to win a nomination. I think I view him as not a great actor, but I always enjoy his films is more where I stand with him. I find he's got a character he plays very well, but I think that generally he's cast for that overall character in most films.
I mean, recently, yeah. But I think, like Sophie's talking about Always Be My Maybe, that's against Keanu type and he plays it magnificently. Yeah. Helen, Constantine, Keanu. We've had him on here a fair bit.
Yeah, we have, yeah. I like Keanu. I feel that he gets like unfair slack about not being a great actor and like, he does. He is acting. Like, he is acting on screen. To say that he's not acting and embodying a role, I think, is a bit unfair to him. But I actually watched Constantine recently, probably like a month or two ago, because I was just looking for something to watch. And I just like typed in Tilda Swinton. And I was like, oh, I've not seen this one. And I had been led to believe that this film was not good. And it is good. I really enjoyed it. And I feel angry at all the like reviewers and kind of like general vibes that were like, this film's terrible, this film's rubbish. They misled me. So apologies to this film. I would say that I do like a lot of it, but I think to compare it to The Matrix is probably a little bit high because one thing it doesn't have going for it is that the effects have not aged well. And I think that's just kind of like a 2005 thing, like any effects from that era just kind of look dated now, which is a bit of a shame. But it's got a great cast, Keanu Reeves, Rachel Weisz, Tilda Swinton in an inspired casting as Gabriel, Peter Sommers in it. Less interesting casting is Gavin Rossdale, who is in it for some reason. I'm not sure why. It's his only film credit, I don't know.
I have a feeling that's so that weird because
I was like, I know this guy. Why do I know this guy? And I didn't want to IMDb. I was hoping he was going to come to me. And of course, it's your man from
Bush.
Your man from the band Bush. I was like, holy shit!
I have a feeling they had to put a Brit in it somewhere because obviously he was a British punk. That's who Constantine was. So they were like, oh, let's just get somebody from kind of a British grunge band. That kind of matches, doesn't it? Balthazar. Like, it was just very strange. But he plays it very well. And I you know, I can't really hate on that. I think it's not a bad performance.
I remember Constantine mainly from the Sandman comics. And I haven't seen the TV show.
Hellblazer was his comics, Hellblazer. I think. Yeah. Hellblazer.
Say again, sorry?
Hellblazer were the comics that came in. Yeah.
They had to change the name because it was too much like Hellboy, which was released at the same time. That's how it became.
Hellraiser as well, yeah.
And then, I know, like, I haven't seen the TV series, Sandman, but I know there's Constantine in it. I think it was played by a woman, Joan Constantine?
Yeah.
Yes, is that right? Yeah, there is.
So I'm interested to see what that interpretation is. Keanu, I think, is great. I think still my favourite performance of his is a monologue he gives in Parenthood about anyone can be a father.
Oh,
film we've had on here.
Oh, my God.
It's such a lovely kind of moment in Insight. But then we've had Always Be Mine. Maybe we've had John Wick.
Point Break.
So Point Break, yeah. So yeah. Potentially, if someone wants to give it, you know, we found out we've got a couple of people who follow us on Letterboxd and do a better job of cataloguing the films that we've talked about than we are.
Doing the Lord's work.
So you guys, we need to do a name check. Next time we record, we're going to record, say your names, your Letterboxd names, and say thank you very much. is there a way on Letterboxd to filter down who the actors in your films? Because that'll be quite interesting to see which are the most recurring actors.
I believe you can do if you pay.
I think it's great.
if you're a pro account.
Maybe we get a pro account for a month and do some fangly bangly stuff to see our most
get some serious stats.
Our most repeated actors. But yeah, I think it's great.
I think the one performance I want to talk about in this film, and I just, if we could be taking over, it's just like Peter Stormare's performance as Lucifer is just like out of this world. Like, to me, I remember when he came down personally to collect John Constantine because he killed himself, and he said he was the one soul he'd come to earth to collect himself. I love the fact that he basically must have come to work for a day, knocked that performance out, probably did all, got in the goo, got in the makeup, and then went and smashed that performance out probably in 2 hours and just went home. And I just think, like, he's just such a strange but amazing actor. Like, I always remember the first time I saw him was in another film that I weirdly enough kind of like, but definitely Fargo. But actually before that was, and it's like a golden raspberry like hitter, and it is 8mm with Nicolas Cage. Do you remember that film where he plays like the weird snuff porn director who gets like kidnaps the girls or whatever? And I just remember being like, who's this creepy dude? And he's just, it's, his face has always just stayed with me as maybe some form of nightmare, I don't know, but he's just brilliant. Yeah, and Fargo, like, you just, he's just an incredible, like,
and American Gods. He was just in American Gods and really good in that.
Again,
as well,
he's playing
amazing
in that kind of like theology kind of fantasy angels and demons world, which I love. Like, the film that I would have done if it wasn't Netflix, and it's one of my favorites, a film called The Prophecy with Christopher Walken. If you've seen
we've had that. We've had The Prophecy.
Oh, really?
It is.
Already gone.
Yes, go. But it's one of my favorite films of all time. Like, I always like when people are weirdly cast. Like, Viggo Mortensen was cast as the devil in that film, and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, but I just
don't want to listen to that episode because I don't think we reviewed it so highly.
Yeah, I get why it probably isn't like Christopher Walken's finest hour, but for what it is and the cast it has, I'll be celebrating another film soon. But yeah, I just loved it. And Jaiman Honsu, who plays Papa Midnight in Constantine, what a casting. Like, almost a spot on casting, I believe, because he's so
No one's mentioned Shia LaBeouf yet.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah,
do
controversial,
we?
Maybe now.
Yeah,
we
that's
don't
why.
Do,
yeah.
Really.
It was. I mean, we had Shia LaBeouf in a film recently, and we were like,
Falcon.
He's actually not a knobhead. And then, like, 2 weeks later, after we recorded, it's like, oh, he's a real knobhead.
Turns out, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he dies in it, doesn't he? He dies quite grisly, in a kind of grisly way. So.
Yeah, he dies by. Obviously, he tries to help exorcise the demon from Rachel Weisz and ends up getting his back broken or whatever that way. Yeah. But what's really interesting about this film, I didn't know, and I literally didn't know until I researched yesterday, was this was one of the first ever comic book films to have an end credit scene, because they didn't do that until Iron Man in 2008. But in 2005 is when this came out. And I didn't even know there was an end credit scene at Constantine. So the end credit scene is him, Shia LaBeouf, obviously has been made into an angel for sacrificing himself to help. So that's the scene, is Constantine goes to the grave and he's watching over it as an angel. But yeah, I didn't know that. I was like, that's really interesting that that's one of the first kind of end credit scenes that they'd done for anything that was comic book, graphic novel related.
And now it's like, I went to see Black Panther. And spoilers, there's no final credit sting in Black Panther. So after the mid-credit one, just go home.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah.
So there was, but yeah, what I was going to say, just to echo what Helen said, that the reviews of Constantine weren't that great, or at least it wasn't saying, hey, go to the cinema and see this right now. And after the Matrix films, I was kind of like, you know what? It looks a bit like The Matrix and everyone says it's not that great. I think I'm kind of fine here. And whilst I think it's quite a hammy, I think it's a lot of fun to be had from it.
I think it was kind of a break from The Matrix in the sense that it took it back to that kind of 90-minute kind of almost late 90s action fantasy feel a little bit. Like there's films like that that, you know, I also love, like Demolition Man, those kind of like 90s films.
Also a film like we've had on here.
Yeah, it felt like it was really like pace like that. And what's really interesting is that the director, Francis Lawrence, this was his first feature film. He hadn't done a feature film before. So he was a director.
Had he done shorts, like, though?
He's done 60 music videos.
Yeah, so he did
Cry Me a River.
He's done music videos.
OK Goes, Get Over It.
Bad Romance for Lady Gaga. He did Independent Woman for Destiny's Child. He did Incubus, Green Day, Janet Jackson, everything. So
was it OK Go one with the one with the treadmills?
Yeah, that one.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's really interesting to see this was his first kind of feature film, but he apparently like he focused so much on getting the kind of dialogue and story right because he knew that the stylizing of it just came naturally to him because he was so used to doing music videos and that is, so I thought that was really interesting. And like the set designer was the same girl who did all of Training Day, so did all the LA locations there because it was all shot in LA. The cinematographer was the same person who did Interview the Vampire. So all these films that I just loved that I was like, oh, this is a weird coincidence.
I fed into it. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's really interesting. And he said, the director said, the only film he watched, because everybody was nudging him to watch, you know, comic book remakes or adaptations. He said the only film he watched before he went to make Constantine was he watched Blade Runner, the original, again, because he wanted that kind of dark LA brooding night stylization that there was, that could have been pulled out of it. So yeah. Okay. Just a fountain of knowledge about this film.
I love it when our guests are more prepared than we are. So I was just right. Like, yeah, I watched it. What's this, right?
Yeah. But there is a Constantine 2 coming 17 years later. Yeah. They realised when they went
Keanu
to Comic-Con.
Again?
Yep, signed up to do it. Yep, through and through. Okay. And Francis Lawrence, again, the original director, and the screenplay writer who did lots of like the Hunger Games and stuff as well. So lots of other stuff. So did like iRobot, I Am Legend, did lots of stuff with Will Smith in that weird kind of era. So yeah.
The director did the Hunger Games ones afterwards, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, he did.
I think it was the first one.
Which Hunger Games did he do?
He did the Definitely Catching Fire and...
He did like 3 out of 4, I think.
Not the first one.
Maybe not the first, but...
Not the first one. The first one was the best one, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably more kind of how they took it. But yeah, I don't think I watched it to the end.
No, I'd read the books and got really... Yeah, demotivated after film 2. I was a bit like, yeah, done with this now.
Still going, more films.
Yeah,
but I was going to say he did the director also did I Am Legend, which was good.
Yeah, that's what Sophie said. The Will Smith. It's got mixed reviews. That I Am Legend, I can see why.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's probably why people don't.
something about like adapting the source material, but not quite adapting it. Maybe. In a way that certain people expected. Seems to be a bit of a theme.
But then there was multiple endings for that as well, wasn't there? That confused the whole matter because not everyone had watched the same end.
What, for? Oh, right, really? I Am Legend.
For I Am Legend, I believe so.
I didn't know that. Oh my god.
Yeah, there's a different scene for that end. Well, we're not going to spoil the film in case someone hasn't watched the ending yet.
Yeah. Well,
it's been a while. Let's get back to hope.
Oh my god.
Let's get back to Constantine, I guess, so we make sure we don't spoil I Am Legend. Watch his other films. They're, I guess, broadly, they're kind of, quite entertaining and maybe not too heavy in terms of, you're not going to feel like bummed out really by watching them. Although maybe with I Am Legend, there's some, horrible dog stuff. Anyway, let's head to the scores, guys.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by 3 or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. They are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Sophie, with your recommendability.
I'm going to go a 4.3 because I just think everybody should watch it once. I think it's really fun. It's, you know, it's just a solid like 90 minutes, if not less. And yeah, it's just a great film. Keanu looks very, very good in it. And yeah, I think it's brilliant.
Miz?
I am going to give it a 3 just because I feel if I'm recommending a fantasy film, this one's a bit aged for me now. And I think I watched a lot of fantasy films, so there's probably something else I'd recommend over it now.
When you say fantasy, because that conjures in my mind like Lord of the Rings type vibe. So
yeah, I'd still lump it all into the same kind of thing, okay. Because it's got that kind of like yes, like Lord of the Rings has got basically demons coming out. it's modern, one's old, but they're both wizards and necromancers and stuff in there.
I guess yes. There's one that's kind of like period-ish in Middle Earth, but this one's set in a more modern time. That's the difference. All fantasy.
What is interesting about demons, though, is again, when I was doing some research on it, I read that it was being shot on the Warner Brothers lot in LA, and at the same time, Batman Begins was being shot on the lot across the way. And so Warner Brothers kind of weren't really that bothered about Constantine. They'd given them like $100 million, which obviously is a lot of money, but back when, considering how much was spent on Batman Begins, and then probably Christian Bale's salary alone was probably not that much. So they kind of said to them, look, you could have your $100 million and do what you want to do. We're not going to check in on you. We're too busy worrying about Batman. But the only agreement is that it has to be a PG-13, this film. And they were like, oh God. Okay. So they went to the Motion Picture Association to basically get the list of like what so there's loads of, apparently there's a list of like what can be in a film for it to be classified as a PG-13. So you only have like 2 fucks, 1 mild sex scene, small amount of violence, whatever. So they followed it to the letter, took it to the MPA apparently, and they started watching it and they were like, rated R. And they were like, well, it's like anything to do with angels, demons, menacing, like, you know, America is quite a strict Catholic conservative country. So even if it was about, even if it was about, you know, I don't know, kids making ice cream, if it had a demon in it, it's going to get a rated R. That's just what they learned.
Sure.
So it's like, they were really like, had to go back to Warner Brothers and be like, we're really sorry. And they were like, just put it out anyway. It's fine. But yeah, I like that.
That's
interesting. That they followed it to the letter and then they were just like, piss off.
It would have been interesting to see what kind of film they would have made had they known straight away. I mean, maybe that's Constantine too. Guys, we could swear more.
But what's interesting now is if that film had gone to the MPA now, it probably would be a PG-13 compared to what we see in films today, right? Some of the gore
compared
and stuff
to like John
we're
Wick
seeing.
And...
Yeah, exactly. Like it's much milder than that. So it must have just been a off the time, or maybe it's in America. It's like, don't put angels and demons in films. Basically, you're going to get an L-rated R.
it did start paving the way for that. Sorry, that like Vertigo. Comics, like the darker, like more gritty,
like
violent.
Sin City and stuff like that. Like, that's really
it was a first step, but I would have loved to see a proper R-rated written version of that. Would have been great too.
Yeah, well, that's what they said they were gutted about, because they said that, you know, if they knew it was going to be rated R, they would have made a rated R making movie. It would have been like a lot more graphic. It would have been a lot more, you know, there'd been a lot more in it. But so they basically presented a PG-13 movie rated as R, apparently. So
Helen, recommendability.
Yeah, I feel that it was a bit unfairly slated, but also I have no kind of knowledge of the books and how faithful it was. So I have a feeling that perhaps a lot of people would have taken a bit of a slight to things being changed and not to their liking. So I'm not going to go out and say it's a great adaptation, because I've got absolutely no idea. But it is quite entertaining, even though it is quite dark. So there's a lot of like suicide themes, so that maybe wouldn't have helped it in it getting that PG-13 rating. And I think the ending is, it drags on a little bit and gets a little bit kind of like tangled up in itself, but I enjoyed it. I thought Reeves was good, and I'd be quite excited to see this one, the part two, when it comes. Hopefully it's good or on par with this one. So I think I'm gonna go for a 3.7.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3. I'll give it a 4, because I was blindsided by the reviews and just literally obviously never got around to it, even though I like Keanu. So this was probably the biggest blind spot in his oeuvre. We definitely want to have Speed, the first one in there, and the last and the first John Wick we haven't got on here. But apart from that, I'm not sure what else we need to fill
Bram
in this.
Stoker's
to
have,
Oh dear.
What?
Repeat viewing score.
I could watch it anytime, anywhere. Like if it's on randomly on the TV, I'll be like, right, that's what I'm watching the rest of tonight. So I would easily say like a 4.5 for me. Easy.
Do you know how many times you watched it? Was it, and did you have it on DVD? Was it one of those films you
yes,
had on
DVD? Yes, I have got
it
on DVD. Yeah. I have, of course. Yeah. So I've probably seen it like, I don't know, about six times now, I reckon, easily. Yeah, okay. I just really liked it.
Miz?
Yeah, I'd give it a 4.5 too. I mean, I've watched it more than Sophie by the sounds of it. I put fantasy films on to like, to fall asleep to or just like to zone out to. So I think I've watched it 10, 20 times minimum.
Helen?
Yeah, so I've only seen this fairly recently, like a couple of months ago. So I didn't rewatch for this because it was still quite fresh and it's like a good 2 hours. So it's not an easy one for me to go back to. So I'll go down the middle, 2.5. I think I'd probably want to watch any new adventures before I come back to this one.
Yeah, this is my first time watching it. Like I said, we just maybe listening to reviewers too much. So yeah, I will watch it again. I'm not sure how often, maybe rewatch before the next film comes out. And I'm sure I'll have a bit of a Keanu Reeves-a-thon one weekend, and this will certainly be part of that. We haven't had any Bill and Ted would be great to have in Flixwatcher in the canon.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will come to Flixwatcher at some point and someone chooses it. I thought there must be a glaring Keanu Reeves film that we haven't seen. There's three of those films.
Slade's film, Much Ado About Nothing, that's not been on either.
I mean, oh God, he was in that as well. And The Devil's Advocate as well. People forget about that, where he was like, with Al Pacino. That's a good film.
So yeah, small screen score, Sophie.
Yeah, like 5.
Did you see this in the cinema?
Yeah, I think I did. But at the same time, like, I just think you could watch it on the small screen. It's just like a great, like Miss says, little fantasy film. You could put it on in the background. You don't have to necessarily be glued to it, but it just, I think it's a great small screen film for you to just pop on if you're looking for something like of an evening to just zone out to a bit. That's great.
Miz?
I'm torn on this one. I don't like watching fantasy films on a small screen because that's kind of the point. But saying that, the special effects on this are a bit dated, so I'm not sure that it's necessarily improved by watching on a massive screen either right now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go right in the middle, 2.5.
Yeah, because this is a weird one where they had the capacity. Special effects were expensive, so they kind of like, if they did a little bit of effort into it, then nowadays it looks really bad. But things like The Matrix or Jurassic Park, where they put lots of effort into it, they still like look amazing. So it's this kind of halfway house where they've kind of tried a bit and it just now it's like, oh man, this is quite bad.
I think that's to do with budget though. That's a budget thing. Like when you look at how much money was spent on like the fact that they said that like $100 million was like a little budget that Warner Brothers gave them because they were spending almost $500 on Batman. So maybe that's it. It's money. Money equals good effects.
But Batman didn't have much in the way of CGI. Begins.
Yeah, Chris Nolan did all physical stunts, didn't he, for everything?
Yeah.
You've got Unreal Engine now, so hopefully that's you're seeing a lot more films made of low budget but incredible special effects, hopefully, coming up.
Small screen score, Helen?
Yeah, I'm the same. I feel that watching it on the big screen would expose the slightly shoddy demons. And is it like a swarm of locusts or flies at the start? And it's just a bit like, whew.
Yeah, like bugs. Oh,
this
it's a bit
thing,
Men
yeah.
in Black, wasn't
the special
it?
Effects
at one point.
Bit, has not aged well, which I think is a shame because maybe with a bit better effects, it would maybe withstand a big screen a bit more. So, I mean, because I watched it on a small screen, I'm going to say 5.
I think it's going to be, if this was to be on at the Prince Charles Cinema and I was walking past when it was about to start, I don't think I'd be that fussed about going in to watch it. I think it does work well at home. Engagement score, Sophie.
Is the engagement score how engaged you have to be to watch it or how much you enjoy it? Remind me what exactly the engagement score is.
Are you, whilst you're watching it, how much are you paying attention to the film? Are you checking your phone? Are you doing toilet stops?
I'd say, I mean, that's probably because I've just seen it so many times now, but I'd say like a 3.8 because I know it like the back of my hand, so I can doom scroll and I can nip and get a cup of tea or whatever. So that's probably why my engagement score's around there. But
did
yeah.
you say like, doom scroll?
Doom scroll, yeah. So just scrolling endlessly into the doom of TikTok or whatever is on. Doom scroll.
I'm a marketing guy and I've never heard that before.
What? Have you never heard that? It's doom scroll. No. Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. Just endlessly scrolling into the abyss. But yeah, so yeah, I'd say 3.8 for me.
Miz?
I am putting this film on purely to fall asleep to. and I mean that in a nice way. It's like a comforting, but yeah, I'm not going to be
warm hug of a film.
Yeah, it's just like Keanu Reeves' demons are going to send me to sleep. Yeah. I'm happy. Yeah. Yeah. So no, I'm going to go lower with this. I don't want to be unfair to it, but yeah, 2.5 again. Like I'm not watching to pay attention to it. I'm watching just for the sake of having some fantasy on screen.
Gotta have that fancy on screen.
So interesting. What point do you kind of like normally fall asleep when? What's the bit where you?
It depends how tired or how many glasses of wine I've had before putting it on. We literally watched it again last night, and I watched about half of it and then finished it this morning. But if I'm very tired, I will literally watch 10 minutes and pass out.
I think it takes a certain film, like knowledge of a film, that you're quite happy to fall asleep through it.
Mm.
Helen?
I mean, I wouldn't pick this for a falling asleep film. I've got my own favourites, but this one wouldn't be one. I watched this just because the way I was watching it in a couple of sittings, so I can't give it 100% engagement because it didn't do that. So about 3.5. I think the ending was kind of like a little bit like, oh, there's just too much going on here. They could have trimmed it down a little bit. So, 3.5.
Yeah, let's go for 3.5 as well. I think it's like I say, it's my only watch, so I didn't really know where it was going. And I don't know why, but just in the back of my mind, I had the Constantine Sandman thing kind of looping around in my head and thinking, like, I should watch that when I can carve out 10 hours of my life. I need to fully focus on that 10 hours, I think, of Sandman as well. But yeah, I had no idea where it was going. It's fun. 3.5. That gives us an overall score of 3.74375. Decent. It's the repeat viewing score. Kind of let it down. You can go onto our website, flixwatcher.tv/scoreboard, when this is out, and check out how this fared against the other Keanu Reeves films, John Wick 2, John Wick 3, Parenthood, Almost Be My Maybe, Point Break. And there will be surely more to come in the future. But yeah, 3.75 is decent. We got one response on Twitter. So if you don't follow us on Twitter already, guys, we are at FlixWatcherPod. And do follow us because before we record, we put a shout out asking for you guys to give your opinions on the film. And look out for a tweet like this saying, we're reviewing Constantine with Pouchtron and Ms. Trujillo. Did I say it right this time?
You did.
From Audi Shows. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars. We had one response from a repeat responder. Sophie, do you want to give us that?
Liam H. Dempsey, who's at Liam H. Dempsey, has said, every shot is beautiful and Reeves gives a decent performance, but to call this a faithful adaptation of the comics would be a misnomer and a half. The casting of Shia as Chaz is utter insanity, but at least it keeps a darker tone. Plus, John smoking, I like the TV network adaptation, 3 stars. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, yeah, Shia was a strange casting at the time. But yeah, I would agree with that, 100%.
Fair play. Can you tell everyone where we can find you guys online? And we'll say goodbye to everyone who's listening.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at Pouchatron, P-O-U-C-H-A-T-R-O-N. And I work for Audi Shows. So if you're making podcasts or have a podcast already, check us out, audi.co. Come and say hi.
And yeah, I'm at Ms_Trujillo. I'll spell it out for you this time. Trujillo. Just following suit. And yeah, check us out at Audi as well. Check out my old podcast. Promote the hell out of it on Twitter. I think that's it.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to talk about Constantine. And we'll see you guys soon.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.